I didn't want to disturb you, she said. It's just I was trying to contact Gordon and can't. There's no reply from London, or the cottage, or his car, or his bleeper. It's just that for someone as obsessively in contact as Gordon, it's a bit odd. You heard he's had a phone put in his isolation tank. True. I haven't spoken to him since yesterday, said Richard. He suddenly remembered the tape he had taken from Susan's answering machine and hoped to God there wasn't anything more important in Gordon's message than ravings about rabbits. He said, I know he was going to the cottage. I don't know where he is. Have you tried? Richard couldn't even think of anywhere else to try. Good God. Richard? How extraordinary. Richard, what's the matter? Nothing, Kate. Just read the most astounding thing. Really? What are you reading? Well, the telephone directory, in fact. Really? I must rush out and buy one. Have the film rights gone? Look, sorry, Kate, can I get back to you? I don't know where Gordon is at the moment, and... Don't worry, I know how it is when you can't wait to turn the next page. They always keep you guessing till the end, don't they? It must have been Zbigniew that did it. Have a good weekend. She hung up. Richard hung up too, and sat staring at the box advertisement lying open in front of him in the yellow pages. It said, Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency. We solve the whole crime. We find the whole person. Phone today for the whole solution to your problem. Missing cats and messy divorces a speciality. 33A Peckender Street, London, N1. 01-354-9112. Peckender Street was only a few minutes' walk away. Richard scribbled down the address, pulled on his coat, and trotted downstairs, stopping to make another quick inspection of the sofa. There must, he thought, be something terribly obvious that he was overlooking. The sofa was jammed on a slight turn in the long, narrow stairway. At this point, the stairs were interrupted for a couple of yards of flat landing, which corresponded with the position of the flat directly beneath Richard's. However, his inspection produced no new insights, and he eventually clambered on over it and out of the front door. In Islington, you can hardly hurl a brick without hitting three antique shops, an estate agent, and a bookshop. Even if you didn't actually hit them, you would certainly set off their burglar alarms, which wouldn't be turned off again till after the weekend. A police car played its regular game of dodgems down Upper Street and squealed to a halt just past him. Richard crossed the road behind it. The day was cold and bright, which he liked. He walked across the top of Islington Green, where Winers got beaten up, past the site of the old Collins Music Hall, which had got burnt down, and through Camden Passage, where American tourists get ripped off. He browsed among the antiques for a while and looked at a pair of earrings, which he thought Susan would like, but he wasn't sure. Then he wasn't sure that he liked them, got confused, and gave up. He looked in at a bookshop and, on an impulse, bought an anthology of Coleridge's poems, since it was just lying there. From here, he threaded his way through the winding back streets, over the canal, past the council estates that lined the canal, through a number of smaller and smaller squares, till finally he reached Peckender Street, which had turned out to be a good deal further than he thought. It was the sort of street where property developers in large Jaguars drive around at the weekend salivating. It was full of end-of-lease shops, Victorian industrial architecture, and a short, decaying, late Georgian terrace, all just itching to be pulled down so that the sturdy young concrete boxes could sprout in their places. Estate agents roamed the area in hungry packs, eyeing each other warily, their clipboards on a hair trigger. Number 33, when he eventually found it, neatly sandwiched between 37 and 45, was in a poorish state of repair, but no worse than most of the rest.